Will You Serve? A Supernatural Fanfic by Rainy Lemons, read by Rothera Story. She is deceptively tiny. White light leaks out of the corner of her eyes like tears of sunlight, and her hands are barely larger than a child's. When she lays them on Sam's thick, muscular thigh, it's ridiculous and kind of obscene. She looks at Dean and puts the question to him again. Will you serve? Dean cannot look away from Sam as he slowly shakes his head.
No.
He's still looking when she grabs hold of Sam with her petite hands and violently twists. The sound of cracking bones, the sound of Sam's leg being ripped as she neatly, easily twists it in its hip socket, is sickening. Sam's leg is facing almost backward, and he's screaming when the little angel looks at Dean again and raises an eyebrow.
No,
Dean says again. He wants to cover his eyes, but he doesn't. 18 months later. They've been in the car for hours. When they stop, the clouds overhead are low and gray. Dean watches Sam get out of the car and doesn't say anything when he sees his face twist for a moment in agony. Sam shakes it off and straightens up. He forgoes the crutch in the back seat and starts limping gamely enough toward the farmhouse. Dean follows. They're met on the front porch by the sort of matronly woman that Dean expects to have pie and coffee ready for them. She glances down quickly at Sam's leg, blinking at the brace that can't quite contain the unnatural turn of his foot. Sweet as she looks, Dean silently dares her to say anything. She doesn't, but ushers them inside. Inside, they're assaulted by the stench. It's dark and fetid, a nearly unbearable combination of shit and rancid apples. The woman points to the stairs, and Sam's shoulders slump for a moment.
Great,
he says so quietly that Dean knows he's meant to act like he hasn't heard it. Sam resolutely heads to the staircase and starts climbing. Dean sees sweat start to dampen the hair on his neckline on the 8th stair. He doesn't say anything about that either, or about the fact that it takes Sam 10 minutes to climb the stairs. He just follows silently and wonders if they'll be lucky enough to get fed after this. They pass a boy sitting on the top of the stairs. He's got an arm slung around the newel post like it's his best friend. He's sobbing quietly. Sam's large hand drops to the boy's head for a moment as he awkwardly climbs the last step and goes by. The door to the last room on the left is shut, but there's a faint curl of vapor easing its way out from beneath the door. Dean can hear growling and praying inside. He expects to find shades of The Exorcist and Emily Rose inside, and he's not wrong. The room has been stripped but for the bed. The paint on the walls is bubbling and falling off in small clumps like yellowed cottage cheese. The old farmer sits with his Bible next to the bed where the demon rides his eldest. Dean's surprised to see that she's tied down with salted rope. He's more surprised when she turns her inky gaze toward them and smiles. The question is for Sam this time.
Will you serve? She asks, gesturing to his twisted leg.
The hike up the stairs has tired him, and Sam's dragging his leg as he limps to the bed. Dean's quietly very proud of him when he uncaps the flask he carries in his jacket and sprinkles holy water on her.
No,
Sam tells the demon.
I won't.
And then he starts to chant in Latin. This has been Will You Serve? A Supernatural Fanfiction by Rainy Lemons. To leave feedback for the fanfic, please go to rainylemons.livejournal.com. To leave feedback for the podfic, please go to ratherastory.livejournal.com. Thank you for listening. Apple Pie and Liniment, a Supernatural fanfiction by Rainy Lemons, set in the Will You Serve verse, read by Rotherastory. Exorcisms end in tears. This is an irrefutable fact as far as Dean is concerned. Someone lives, someone dies. It doesn't matter. Someone is always weeping in the end. Sometimes unintelligibly, and others, it's like the farmer, who holds his screaming daughter while tears flow quietly down his lined face, and he says, over and over, I've got you. It's okay, Steffi. Hush now, you're going to be fine. The bedroom, the site of the exorcism, is in shambles. Shit stains the sheets and the walls because, as Dean knows from personal experience, Some demons are just nasty fuckers. Blood drips from 4 burning lines down his cheek, and Dean can't help but wonder if there's shit down in his wound, polluting his bloodstream. It could be worse, he knows. He looks at Sam, sees him chug straight from the flask of holy water. He gargles and spits out a pinkish stream, rinsing the tainted blood the demon had spit into his mouth, even as he reaches down with his free hand to work at his hip. He's leaning awkwardly against the wall, drying clumps of blistered paint and strips of wallpaper still falling down on his head, like the last few flakes of a snowstorm. His right leg is stretched out, foot turned a bit at the ankle, leg twisted at the hip, and Sam reaches down to dig beneath the straps of the leg brace that keeps him moving in mostly all one direction. Dean remembers the tiny angel who broke him so. "Will you serve?" And the demon, 5 minutes exorcised back to hell, who had offered to fix the wounds heaven had dealt. Sam rubs his leg while the farmer shushes his 17-year-old daughter. And Dean watches them both, thinking it sucks, thinking that life is really pretty goddamned unfair. He and Sam leave the room together as the rest of the family, a fretting mother and her skittish son, come timidly inside. Sam is trying to lessen the severity of his limp, but Dean doesn't miss how he grabs onto the newel post when they reach it, or how he hesitates at the top of the stairs. He gets himself on Sam's bad side, wraps an arm around his waist, and doesn't flinch or bat an eye when Sam lets out a stream of curses. He doesn't leave Dean behind, doesn't push him away, and neither of them say anything as Sam leans on him heavily and takes it one careful step at a time. Dean claims the farmer's den as theirs for the night. He doesn't go upstairs, doesn't ask if it's all right. He just settles Sam down on the couch and undoes the buckles on his leg brace. Sam grouses as Dean feels along the twisted mess of it, and he leaves him be, helps him prop his long leg up on a chair pulled from the kitchen, and stands in the doorway until Sam closes his eyes. Outside, he digs through the impala for their things and drags it all, both duffels and Sam crutch, with him. The gray skies have sunk lower, and something a little meaner than sleet is falling when he trots back up the front porch with it all. Dean digs through Sam's bag for his pills, and frowns at the empty bottle he finds. He digs deeper, hoping that there's one more fentanyl patch down in the traveling pharmacy they now carry, but there's no luck to be had. He finds one questionably aged Percocet in the first aid kit, and takes it to Sam with a glass of tap water. Sam frowns when he takes a drink, makes a face and says, "Still tastes like sulfur." But he swallows the pill, and that's something. Dean knows it won't be enough, knows it won't touch the pain in Sam's leg, but it might help him drop off to sleep for a bit. Sam waves him off and closes his eyes again, leaving Dean to wander through the house that is now mostly quiet, save for the quiet murmuring upstairs and the sound of water running in the bathroom. It's Thanksgiving, and, though he doubts it with what the family has been enduring, he goes to the kitchen in the hopes of food. There's no turkey, no fresh bread or stuffing, nothing but a bushel of apples going to rot next to a bin of withering potatoes. But he finds coffee and starts some of that for himself while keeping a packet of instant cocoa and a can of soup off to the side in case Sam doesn't sleep and finds himself hungry. He isn't hungry and he doesn't sleep, can't sleep, and so Dean says nothing when Sam sits down on one of the hard kitchen chairs, leg out of its brace and stretched out awkwardly. He hands him a bowl of apples he's saved from the rot. They're all bruised, but they'll do, and Sam doesn't question, doesn't ask, "Hey, think we should check with the family before we take over here?" He takes the paring knife Dean gives him and starts peeling and coring the apples, smiling a little. They work in silence, Sam sometimes shifting and huffing a little with each movement, Dean rolling out the pie crust he's made from memory. He nods when Sam looks hopefully toward the cinnamon and shakes in extra, along with a pinch of ground cloves. When the pie's in the oven and the smell of it starts to chase away the fetid stink of hell and sickness from the kitchen, if not the house, he coaxes Sam into eating. Makes him a can of New England clam chowder, and does up a couple of slices of Texas toast when he can't find any crackers. Pain or no pain, his brother is still a massive man, powered by food. He eats all of his soup, sops up the creamy leftovers with his toast, and Dean thinks, were it not for the leg, that Sam would have gone for the second can they found in the cupboard. He doesn't, and so Dean bullies him back to the den with the promise of cocoa. The kettle is whistling when Dean takes the pie out of the oven. There's still no sign of the family, but he doesn't find that strange. He figures they're all heaped together in one of the untouched rooms. Maybe the mother and father's bedroom, kids in bed with them while they work through it all, and that suits him just fine. Family should stick together, and he doesn't feel the need to have anyone fuss over them, though it has occurred to him to ransack their medicine cabinet for stronger pain medicine for Sam. He finds a bottle of Tylenol, an estrogen replacement pack, and some Tums, but nothing useful. In the den, Sam's managed to change into a t-shirt and boxers. The couch is a hide-a-bed, and he's pulled the bed out, is sitting up against the back of the couch, legs stretched out on the thin mattress while he works both hands hip to knee with tightly closed eyes.
Bad? Dean asks him.
Bad enough, Sam replies. Are there marshmallows? He doesn't get pissy at the change of subject, knows that it's something so ingrained in Winchester behavior that he's pretty sure they must have a gene for it.
I didn't check, but I can see if there's any.
Lots, Sam tells him. More than five this time. Dean takes the steaming cup of cocoa back to the kitchen, smiling at the memory of counting out marshmallows for himself and Sam 15 or 20 or 1,000 years ago in another life when his little brother had had to stand on a chair in some shitty motel kitchenette in order to watch Dean make cocoa, not from a packet, but from milk, sugar, and dry cocoa powder that they carried in a generic tin in the back of the Impala. He's just sipping off some of the cocoa in order to make room for Sam's marshmallows when the farmer comes to the kitchen, red-eyed and carrying a flat yellow bottle. The farmer, Dale, Dean remembers, doesn't thank him, doesn't from the look of him have the words. He takes in the kitchen, sees it tidied up with an apple pie cooling on the rack, and looks at Dean in a way that makes him uncomfortable. It's not like he's a saint or Jesus. He's just a guy that ganks monsters and saves people with his brother, and, yeah, sometimes he makes a damn pie.
Got a lame horse, Dean tells him, and Dean blinks a little at the lack of explanation or preamble.
Steffi's sick in love with it, won't let me put it down, and yeah, he's a good animal. Went down hard on the ice last year, and still followed that girl all the way home like he didn't want to disappoint her. Just refused to lay down and die. Keep his leg wrapped, pay a fortune for steroid shots and what all from the vet, but... He holds the bottle out to Dean. This seems to help some when it's bad. Dean sets Sam's cocoa down and looks at the bottle. Horse liniment. Big as he is, Sam's not a horse. The farmer shakes his head. Nope. But he don't seem like he's gonna lay down and die, neither. Seems like he's got a powerful need to keep going. And I heard you rattling around in the bathroom. Out of pills, is he? Dean nods and gestures meaninglessly with his hand. Thanksgiving and all. Ain't nothing open, Dale agrees. Might help, that. Dilute it down. Keep it away from his eyes and his privates, and you gotta work it in. Ain't as good if you smooth it on like lotion. But it might help some. Stink him up something awful, though. Try riding in the car with him on 2-for-1 burrito days sometime, Dean says dryly, and nods in thanks. He's putting the marshmallows in Sam's cocoa, an obscene amount, when he hears Dale stop, hears him shuffle a bit in the doorway between the kitchen and the living room.
Mr. Winchester, I don't know, I can't...
You don't have to, Dean tells him. It's what we do.
But why?
Dean takes the cocoa and the liniment and heads towards the doorway that will take him through the living room and to Sam waiting in the den. There are a lot of answers to that question, some of them big, some of them small. But he goes with the simplest. It's how we were raised. He doesn't wait for Dale's response, though some part of him thinks it would be a favorable one. He takes the cocoa to Sam, losing a marshmallow off the heap on the top. It drops somewhere in the vicinity of the couch, and he leaves it, figuring that a stray sugar puff is probably the last thing Mrs. Dale, or whatever her name is, will complain about for a while. Sam doesn't hear him coming, and, so, has no time to change his expression from one of desperate pain to mild discomfort. He's breathing through his lips, doing the variation of the Lamaze thing Bobby had gotten him started on earlier in the year, and sweat, which Sam never does lightly, is dripping from his brow.
Shit, Sam, Dean says.
He sets the mug down on the end table next to the hide-a-bed and wipes the sweat from Sam's face with his palm.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry, you ass, Dean tells him. Just get out of your underwear and give me a minute. Sam cracks open one eye and glares at him.
Don't get excited, princess,
I don't swing that way. Chuck's fans be damned. Farmer Dale gave me something to try. Just, Jesus, keep your junk covered up, okay? Saw enough of that in the hospital last year, and I'm fucking scarred for life now that I know just how much of the gene pool works in your favor. Sam huffs out a tight laugh, more than Dean would have hoped for, and he smiles back at him. Back in the kitchen for the 100th time that day, he finds an ancient but well-cared-for green Tupperware bowl. He fills it partially full with cold tap water and throws in two dish towels he finds folded in a drawer next to the sink. Sam's under the striped sheet on the bed when he gets back to him, bad legs stretched out over the top of it, with the rest of him covered demurely. He bitches a little as Dean rolls him to his side, leaving his ass bare and exposed. Dean doesn't say anything about it. They've seen plenty of each other's asses in their lives. But he does pause at the sight of the scars. The knife wound from cold oak still puckers at his spine, but Sam's leg, from his hip down to his knee and then from mid-calf to a brutal, almost spiral pattern around his ankle, is a map of suffering. Long lines and hash marks, old pin scars, and still the ropey twist of raised pink flesh from where his hip had given way to the terrible treatment of an angel riding the body of a tiny little girl. Dean wrings out both of the rags, sets one aside on the end table next to the cocoa, figuring he'll apologize to the farmer's wife for the water stain it'll leave. The other he puts to Sam's face, leans over him, and wipes the sweat from his brow, from his cheeks, and beneath his eyes where Dean wonders if maybe there's something saltier than sweat. He re-wets it, wrings it again, and leaves it on Sam's brow. He checks the liniment instructions, doesn't see any directions or advice for human patients, but guesses. He's got more water than he probably needs, and so he mixes up a lot of it, intending to save whatever's left to rub Sam down again in the night if necessary. The resulting mixture looks like watery cum, smells sharp as hell like turpentine and Christ knows what all, and his fingers tingle a bit when he dips them in the bowl. Dean's not sure if he should use a spare rag or his hands, not sure if the stuff should be more or less watery, but it feels slick enough in his palms, and he gets them good and covered with it before slathering Sam's hip. Sam hisses as Dean starts rubbing it in. Stinks like hell. Upstairs stinks like hell, Dean says. This just smells like, fuck, I don't know, old people? Awesome. Thanks for that, shithead. Dean grins and works his hands quickly, rubbing them across the wrecked mass of Sam's flesh. He starts with the hip joint, sliding fingers around the front, continuing to dig into the skin with the stuff despite Sam's mumbled complaint about getting dangerously close to his groin, and who's one of Chuck's pervert fans now? Sam gets his ass slapped lightly for the comment, and Dean rubs him down like Farmer Dale's lame horse, from front to side to back, from hip to knee. Along the wreck of his calf, that's noticeably thinner than his left these days, and around the twisted foot, despite the hiss of breath that Sam pushes out between clenched teeth. When he's done, Dean goops up his hands again and presses them into the scar on Sam's spine. He rubs the liniment into it as well, works it down his spine, over the crack of his ass, and around again to the hip, constantly rubbing at all of the scars and ruined flesh, as if he can wipe the old wounds away, as if there's hope of taking away the pain with just his hands. It's all he can do, and though Sam's no longer dripping with sweat, though he's loosened up so that he's not holding himself so tautly or so carefully, Dean knows that it's not enough. Sam still hurts. Sam is always going to hurt. Dean sighs, leaving his palm resting on the jut of Sam's hip bone, and wonders again why the cost of saving the world from the apocalypse has to weigh so heavily on him, on his family. It's all I can do, Sammy. Drugstore should open in town at 8. I'll go fill your prescriptions. Well, John Adams' prescriptions, anyway, first thing in the morning. What time is it now? He checks his watch. There's liniment on the face, but it doesn't cover enough of it to give him a reason to lie to Sam. 9:30. Sam groans out, fuck, quietly, and Dean presses down on his hip briefly before covering him back up with a sheet that's spotted with liniment. Cum stains, he thinks, and gets up. He sets the Tupperware bowl on the near ancient desk that's neatly organized with a ledger, a pen cup, and an adding machine that looks about as old and trusty as the Impala. There's a framed family photo with the sort of backdrop used at Walmart or Sears. Dale's family looks happy. Dean glances over at Sam and envies the farmer for it. I'm sorry, Sam, Dean says. It's something he's learned to say in the last 18 months. Something he couldn't stop saying when Heaven's emissary had ruined Sam so, and Dean couldn't think of a way to stop it, or any way to make up for it since. Sam's not gone for his boxers yet. Dean doesn't think he's physically able to get them on. But he's on his back again, propped up with the couch's seat cushions behind him, and reaching out to the cocoa that's just beyond his reach.
What for?
I'm the one that said we could wait until we got to town to fill up the drug stash. You got us here in record time, and it's not like it's your fault that the girl working at the pharmacy in town yesterday wasn't licensed to fill narc prescriptions. It's just bad luck. Dean crosses the room and wipes his hands on the clean rag before picking up the cocoa for Sam. It's only lukewarm now, and the marshmallows have melted down to form a thick layer on the top. Sam doesn't ask for it to be reheated or for a fresh cup, doesn't act like he's the same kid that used to whine and carry on if it wasn't so hot that he'd had to blow on it for 10 minutes before attempting a sip. He takes a drink and Dean closes his eyes, sees both the man before him and the little boy years behind him when Sam looks at him with a frothy marshmallow and cocoa mustache.
You look like hell, Sam tells him,
and Dean nods, not doubting it even though he's the one with two perfect, however bowed, legs, and who can run up and down a flight of stairs all day while Sam labors, one step at a time, to get the job done just once.
And you look like a dork. 27 damn years old, and you still can't drink that shit without wearing half of it on your face.
Sam wipes his mouth with the back of his hand, same as he's done since he was 2, and looks up at him sheepishly, still with a slight furrow of pain between his pinched eyebrows.
Oops.
Sit down, will you? I reiterate, you look like hell. Dean finds a quilt, old but well-kept, like so much of everything in Dale's house, and spreads it out over Sam. He kicks off his boots and climbs onto the hide-a-bed, sitting up like Sam is, but still happy to stretch out. His right big toe pokes out of a hole in his sock, and Dean crosses his left foot over it, wonders if Sam's socks are in the same state, wonders if their lives are nothing but a series of worn-out socks and worn-out bodies and tired, tired hearts.
You stink, Dean tells him, and grins slightly when Sam jabs his elbow into his ribs. Did it at least help any?
A bit, Sam says, and Dean doesn't think he's lying entirely, though he'd have been happier if Sam had said, God, yes, that shit's awesome, and hadn't had to lie about it.
It's, I don't know, a bit looser?
Kind of like the whirlpool they put me in back at the hospital. It's warm down in my joints like that was.
But it still hurts.
It's always going to hurt, Sam says, echoing Dean's earlier thoughts. But it helps. So, you know, thanks. Dean falls back on Winchester communication skill number 1 and changes the subject because that's a better idea than going with what he wants to say, which is, do you hate me for this, Sam? Do you strap on that fucking brace every morning and think about how it should be me? That they should have done this to me instead of you? Along with, I'm sorry, oh Jesus Christ, Sam, I'm so fucking sorry.
You want some pie?
Sam sets his cocoa mug down on the end table and leans back against the couch cushions, pulling the quilt up to his chest.
Nah. We can have it for breakfast, though?
Yeah, we can. Apple pie and coffee.
Sounds good.
Though, he laughs softly, feels a little twist in his heart as he does it. Mom would just shit.
Yeah?
Dean nods. I used to beg for pie in the morning, and Mom, God, lecture city, Sammy. Cereal is for breakfast. Eggs and toast and pancakes, but not pie. Got busted a couple of times for dragging a kitchen chair so I could get into it while she wasn't looking, and I tell you, that woman was fast. I never got much more than a finger in it before she had me up in the air, and she'd be holding me there, staring up at me like she didn't know if she should laugh her ass off or give me the what for. And, yeah, you know, stuff like that.
Tell me about her, Sam says.
It's an old request, one he hasn't made in years. But he looks at Dean hopefully, even while he shifts his bare ass under the covers and twists his face because everything on his right side is hurting him from his hip to his toes. Dean gets up, finds a few pillows from where the quilt had been neatly folded, and takes a moment to prop Sam's leg up and cover him up again. He gets back into the bed, over the covers, and stretches out again.
Mom? Mom was awesome, Dean says. He tells Sam how she'd used to sneak out a hand to grab Dad's ass when she didn't think anyone was looking, which causes Sam to laugh until he puts a hand over his ribs and just stares. Dad? We sure as hell didn't get dropped off by the stork, Sammy. He tells Sam a mishmashed smattering of everything he can think of, good and bad. Most of it good, from how she used to cut the crusts off his sandwiches, dump rice in his tomato soup when it was cold or he was sick. How she'd rocked Sam to sleep, humming old tunes by the Beatles, in a voice that might have made Paul McCartney die of shame, and still tuck Dean in, read him a book every night, and sing to him too, even though she must have been so tired of singing. He tells him about water fights in the bathtub, and how she'd jog after him, hollering bloody murder if he rode his tricycle too far or too fast. How she'd catch it by the seat and call him her speed demon. He describes Mom's smile and Mom's hugs, and Mom's total inability to cook a roast without making it look like the charred remains of a salt and burn. The house is dead silent when Dean stops for breath and has Sam listed toward him, shoulder pressed to his, and his head down against him. He's a heavy weight, and Dean's arm buzzes with pins and needles. But Sam's asleep, the lines of pain and the last year of suffering having smoothed out. And Dean thinks he looks young again, thinks he looks something like the peaceful man their mother never got to know. The lamp shines in Dean's eyes, but he can't reach it, not without getting out of bed. He reaches out with his free hand and tugs the covers up over Sam's shoulder, watches him for several minutes. After a while, Dean leans his head back and closes his eyes. It's late and he's tired. Eventually, he too goes to sleep.
Always In It, a supernatural fanfiction by Rainy Lemons, set in the Will You Serve verse, read by Rother Story. There's no sun when Dean wakes, and the sky is only a fraction lighter to give him any indication that morning has come at all. He seems to ache everywhere, arms stiff in his sockets from hauling Sam around so much in the last 2 days, and his back is one knot on top of another, thanks to the bar from the hide-a-bed digging in beneath him. They've both gone down in the night. The couch cushions are on the floor, and Sam stretched out on his belly, the long length of him sprawled diagonally across the too small bed. He's lying mostly over Dean, ass half bare to the cool air, with legs flung over his, elbow up against his cheek, and Dean's an awkward, uncomfortable mess from spending the night curled around him with so little room in the bed for him. Dean manages to extricate his left arm from beneath Sam without waking him, and checks his watch in the gloom. 6:30. The pharmacy will open at 8, and Dean thinks that he can get on the road now, can be there right when the doors open, because the prescriptions were dropped off on Wednesday, and, God willing, maybe he can get them first thing, and have them back before Sam wakes in too much pain. Sam's asleep still, something Dean counts as a miracle, but when he reaches over to lightly brush his brother's ridiculous hair out of his face, he sees lines of pain, the tension that not even sleep can ease away for too long. He starts moving out from beneath Sam as carefully as he can, inching himself out from beneath his brother's bulk without jostling him too much. Sam groans, his lips purse, and his eyebrows draw together in an expression of unmeasured agony, and Dean freezes, one leg on the floor, half off of the bed, and he thinks maybe he might look like he's been frozen in a limbo pose. Sam's fingers curl reflexively around Dean's bicep, and for a second it looks like he's awake. He blinks rapidly at him, eyes bleary, with sleep dotting the sharp inner corners. Sam shifts his head to clear some of the drool from his mouth and mumbles such a rough, sleep-addled version of good morning that it comes out sounding half-German. Dean doesn't say anything, just waits positioned awkwardly, half in and out of bed, and he's rewarded when Sam's eyes drift closed. His breathing evens out again, and Dean gently peels Sam's fingers from his arm, one at a time, and slides out of bed as quietly as he can. Sam sprawls even more so almost instantly, draws up his left leg and right arm so that he's lying down in the running man position. Sam's always been one to stretch out on his back, but since the hospital he's taken to every position imaginable. The one he's in now won't do anything for his right hip when he wakes. Too much of his weight is on that side of his pelvis, Dean knows, but it gets him back to sleep, and Sam's short enough on sleep these days that Dean lets him be. He finds his boots at the end of the bed and takes them, padding in his socks out of the den, checking his jeans pocket for his keys automatically,
even though he's sure he got the imprint of them on his skin from having slept on them all night. Dean smells fresh coffee when he leaves the den that had been overpowered by the smell of horse liniment. The pot is gurgling in the kitchen, and he makes toward it like it's a beacon drawing him in, pausing briefly to bend over and stuff his feet into his shoes, back popping in that way that's both delicious and agonizing as he does it. He finds Dale in the kitchen, smoking a home-rolled cigarette, next to the sink with two empty cups waiting on the counter next to the coffee pot. Dean's not surprised to see him up, has yet to meet a farmer that sleeps in, and wonders if the man slept at all, given what the family has gone through. "Coffee'll be done in a quick minute," Dale tells him. Dean nods gratefully and sits down on one of the kitchen chairs to lace up his boots. He sees that the pie has been wrapped up in the night, and that there's a collection of things in beat-up shopping bags next to it. Jars of home-canned peaches, bags of jerky, and what he thinks might be boxes of instant potatoes, a couple cans of coffee, an untouched box of cocoa, and cans of soup. Dale catches Dean's glance at it and shrugs. "You'll stay for a couple days," and he doesn't say it like there's any reason for them not to. "But the wife's been in the cellar and the cupboards, collecting things. Says good boys like you need more than greasy road food, and she's not going to let you out of this house without it, so you can just forget about arguing. Never does me any good, let me tell you. She's got plans for a couple of the fatter chickens later tonight, and you and me need to hit the grocery store, or we're in for it." Dean's caught off guard, and a little uncomfortable at the sense that he and Sam have just been adopted into this family without question. Dale pours him a cup of the steaming coffee and brings it to him, setting it down on the kitchen table like he's both an honored guest and an older son. Dean glances back over his shoulder, as if he can see Sam sleeping two rooms away, and takes a drink. It's hot, and nearly scalds his tongue, but Farmer Dale doesn't make a weak brew at all, and Dean takes another, longer sip of the burning stuff eagerly. "Thank you for putting us up for the night. And, Dale, I can't tell you how much I like the sound of a home-cooked meal. Sammy could use a couple, but grocery shopping?" "Senior pie, Mr. Winchester. Figure you can find your way around the grocery well enough." Dean grins a little ruefully and nods. "It's just, the pharmacy opens at 8, and Sam, he needs his medicine. He's been too long without it, and if I don't get something into him soon, he's not going to be able to eat or do anything but lay in that bed and hurt." Dale considers him for a moment, scrutinizes him actually like he can peel back the layers of Dean's head and see all of the history between him and Sam without asking. "He get like that from the work you boys do?" "More or less," Dean sighs. "Sammy and me were cursed," he wants to say. "Damned with a bloodline neither of us asked for or knows how to escape from." "In it," Dean finishes finally. "We're always right in it, no matter where we go, and there are some things that people want us to do that we just can't. They get pissed, and they have some shitty ways of trying to get us to change our minds." "Demons and the like?" "And the like," Dean agrees, thinking of the tiny angel who had mangled Sam's leg. He takes another long drink of coffee to keep from having to say anything more. "I can't think of how you do it, why you do it, but I'm glad you do, Mr. Winchester. I'm sure as hell glad you do." "Dean, please. Mr. Winchester is the guy the cops have on file, if you know what I mean." Dale chuckles a little, like he's got some idea of what that might mean, though he really, really doesn't. "Well, Dean, we still gotta get to the grocery. Pharmacy don't open till 9 after a holiday, but 9? Dean looks back over his shoulder again and bites back a curse. 8 is bad, but 9 is worse. Even hauling ass, 9 means he won't get back to Sam with the meds until almost 9:30. And if the glittering shine of icy rain on the kitchen window is any indication of the condition of the country roads between Dale's house and town, it could be closer to 10. 9. But we can get in and get your brother's stuff at 8:30. Spoke to Maud Eaton. She's the owner of the drugstore, and I explained things to her. She's gonna get there early to get your prescriptions, and some other stuff she thinks might do a damn sight better job. For roads like this, Maud don't drive on him, so she has to wait for Jasper to get home from his overnight shift at the plant in Welling. Figures 8:30 is about the best she can do." Dean fumbles with his coffee cup, head spinning a little because he's slept like shit, and he's trying to process everything, and wondering how much damage control he'll have to do. Harrisonville is a tiny town, a blip on the northernmost part of Iowa's border. But he's had enough experience to know that small-town talk could cause him as many problems as a public, documented police encounter in a big city. Even if the pharmacy owner is willing to fill Sam's script and get them some more serious medication on the sly. And why, Dean can't figure out why she'd do such a thing. There's still the worrisome rub of so many people working together for them, so many people with intimate knowledge about their real names, Sam's condition, and God knows what else. "Dale," he begins slowly. "Sam and me..." "Don't worry about the money, Nun," Dale interrupts, and Dean sort of blinks in embarrassment at the realization that payment is the first thing decent people would think of, not how to get their drugs and stay under radar so that the cops, the feds, and all of the fucking angels and demons plaguing North America won't find them. "And don't worry about the talk, neither," Dale adds, as if reading Dean's mind. "Small towns talk, sure. But we can keep the kinds of secrets you wouldn't believe, too. Maud was out in the beginning when Steffi... when she went funny. Looked after her, and when it got worse... when it wasn't Steffi no more, she's the one that had Jasper call up that friend of yours, Bobby Singer. They both knew him, trust him, because he's been up in town before, long ago. Something took Maud's boy when he was young, some kind of shadow dog. And that Mr. Singer of yours is the one that came to help out." "Black dog," Dean clarifies quietly. "Black dog," Dale agrees. "Whole goddamn town went nuts. People killing each other's dogs in the night. Shooting just about anything on four legs. And when other people started dying, more than a couple on two legs got shot, too. Maud said didn't no one know what it was, what was happening, and everyone thought everyone else was behind it. 14 people died, Mr. Win... Dean. 14. And only 5 of them because of that dog thing. All the rest were shot. Neighbors shooting neighbors. And in all this time, not one fed or state cop ever came sniffing around asking why. Small towns can keep secrets when they gotta, Dean. And there ain't no one gonna say shit about this. About you nor your brother, neither. I owe you. I owe you something I can't ever pay back, and I'm sure as shit not going to let anyone's big mouth ruin nothing." Dean drags a hand across his face, feels his stubble getting long, as if it's thinking about becoming a beard, and he wonders when it was that he last shaved. Monday, maybe? He takes Dale's word, trusts him for who he is, and because a group of people vetted by Bobby earns more than a little trust. But he still shifts uncomfortably. Sam needs the drugs, needs them desperately. But he still feels wrong about it, feels like he's taking advantage of people, getting things and favors out of them for a job that he and Sam have to do anyway, would do and have done for nothing their entire lives. They've taken little handouts of cash before, a few bucks for a meal or a tank of gas, lots of home-baked goods. Dale's wife isn't the first to think of it. And perhaps less honorably, they've both taken the comfort of soft arms and warm beds on more than one occasion. But this is different. It feels different. It feels to him like a town rallying after a wounded pair of heroes who have just slain a fucking dragon, and that's the last thing Dean thinks he is. He hears the echoing whispers of hell just before he wakes every morning, still knows that the battle gaining momentum out in the world has his and Sam's name all over it. But Sam needs the goddamn drugs so badly, and Dean doesn't know how to say no. He just looks at Dale a little helplessly as he sits there smoking the last of his cigarette and tapping the ash into an old tobacco tin. "You don't owe us." "Hell if I don't," Dale replies and stands up. "Come on, let me show you something." Dale heads to the living room and, after a moment and another swallow of coffee, Dean gets up and follows him. They head through the living room to the staircase, and Dale goes up quietly, Dean on his heels. He stops at the top of the stairs and opens a built-in linen cupboard. It's full of fresh-smelling sheets, quilts, and blankets, but the top shelf contains more valuable items. A box of silver, a small chest from what looks like World War II, a few bits of carnival glass, and an old digital camera, still big and made before they'd started to come out small enough to fit in his back pocket. Dean knows what he's going to see before Dale turns the camera on, waits for it to warm up, and pulls up the recent pictures. He's not wrong, and he's handed the camera, stares for a moment at the image of a demon staring up out of Steffi's eyes and looking gaunt, pissed off, and ugly like they do when they're trapped, when they're not able to roam freely and carry on with their rotten deeds and schemes. Dean nods. He's seen it before. But he doesn't bother telling Dale how fucking lucky he is to have trapped the demon behind salt, and how he'd never have seen his daughter again if he hadn't thought of some old bit of forgotten superstition. Dale puts the camera back up on the shelf and closes the linen cupboard. He gives Dean a slight tug, a little grab at the sleeve of his shirt, like a little kid saying, "Please, mister, you gotta," instead of the grown man that he is. He takes him to the back bedroom and quietly opens the door, stands in the doorway for a minute, breathing heavily, and Dean's concerned that the farmer's about to start crying. He doesn't, just moves to the side to allow him to stand next to him on the threshold. It's the man's bedroom, and inside on the beautiful cherry bed that looks big enough, long enough to accommodate a couple of Sam-sized people, Dale's family rests. His wife, Mary, and Dean winces at the realization, wonders how in the name of God he ever could have forgotten, is in the middle of the bed, both of her children snuggled in close with legs flopped over her, and a little line of drool shining down from her son's mouth to form a wet pool on her shoulder. She looks like she doesn't mind, looks like there's nowhere in the world that she'd rather be, and Dean gets it. It's how he woke up that morning, and he understands the need to keep family close, to keep them warm and safe. She's not asleep, and she looks up at them with shining eyes. "Thank you," she mouths silently to Dean, and presses a kiss down on her daughter's head. Steffi still looks like crap. She's pale and bruised and far too damn skinny, but she's peaceful and clean, cozy in her pale pink nightgown that's printed with tubes of lipstick and sunglasses and all of the kinds of things that Dean supposes teenage girls think are cute. She is, he thinks, going to be all right. He inclines his head to Mary and backs quietly out of the room as Dale shuts the door. He and the farmer stand in the hall outside of his bedroom for a moment, regarding one another, and Dean finally sighs. "Okay," he says. "Okay." At 6 minutes after 9, Dean bustles back into the den with a grocery-sized bag of things from the pharmacy. Maud Eaton had quickly risen on the list of really awesome people that Dean's met through Bobby, and he's kind of excited to see how the new pain regimen she's cooked up for Sam will work. Sam's somehow gotten himself washed and dressed, though he hasn't bothered with anything more complicated than clean sweatpants, a t-shirt, and a hoodie so old that the elbows are thin and threadbare. He's sweating again, breathing like Bobby told him, and Dean figures he must be in massive agony when he doesn't dissemble, doesn't play it off, but looks up at him with something close to desperation and panic. "Please tell me someone was working who could fill the prescriptions," Sam breathes out. "That and better," Dean tells him. "We don't have very many of these. Maud only had 10 left from her cancer patient that died last week. So we'll have to stay on top of your pain, keep it under control so that we don't have to use these very much." "Wow. When did you become Nurse Betty?" Sam says, his voice too tight to keep the joke light. But Dean feels a little better when Sam sees that he's pulling a pack of Actiq pain pops from the bag and looks up at him like he's his own personal savior. "How in the hell?" "Dale," Dean replies, and pops one of the drug-infused lollipops from the blister pack. He's pleased to discover that it's red, probably cherry, and he holds it up to Sam triumphantly before handing it to him. "No grape?" Sam asks, but sticks the pop in his mouth anyway. "Yeah, there was like a rainbow of flavors left over from the dead cancer guy who didn't pick up his meds, and I could have gotten you any flavor you wanted, but I picked cherry because cherry is awesome, and grape-flavored anything tastes like purple-sugared jizz, and it's my duty as your brother to spare you from such things." "Grape is awesome," Sam says around the pop. He reaches out and grabs Dean's hand, looks at him with eyes shining with pain and gratitude, and things bigger than Dean thinks he can handle at the moment, and it's on the tip of his tongue to tell Sam to spare him the chick flick moments, to just suck on his cherry-flavored fentanyl lollipop so that he can swallow down some oral steroids and anti-inflammatory meds when he's done. But Sam surprises him. "How you know what jizz tastes like?" Dean barks out a laugh in surprise, almost punches Sam one on the arm before he remembers that he's in enough pain already. He settles for glaring at him, something he supposed is ruined by the dorky smile he's probably got on his face. "Shut up, bitch."
"Jerk. So, favorite condom?"
"Sam.
Penis of a purple people eater?"
Oh, Jesus Christ! Dean lets him go with it, lets him think of a dozen ways that he might have encountered grape-flavored spunk, while he teases him back, sets out his oral meds, and waits for the moment when Sam's eyes don't seem about to cross from the pain. Waits for his taut muscles to loosen, for his breathing to slow, and for him to lean back and finally relax. Later, when Sam's feeling up to it, they'll go mingle with Dale's family, sit down, and get fed like hunters rarely are anymore, and take a couple of days off from the apocalypse and their lives. Then they'll have to get back in it. We'll have to get back on the road, because they're always, always in it.